You're listening to the hashtag STRask podcast. I'm Amy Hall, and I'm here with Greg Kokel. Hi, Greg.
Good morning, Amy. We're just starting out this morning here, so good to see you.
Good to see you, too. All right, let's start with a question from Dialogue Not Ridicule. How would you respond to someone citing the, quote, paradox of tolerance as a reason to not tolerate Christian views? And then he links to a definition. I'll just read a couple sentences of that.
Okay.
The paradox of tolerance states that if a society is tolerant without limit, its ability to be tolerant is eventually seized or destroyed by the intolerant. Karl Popper described it as the seemingly paradoxical idea that in order to maintain a tolerant society, the society must be intolerant of intolerance.
Okay, this is really great. I'm glad this is cited because could you read the opening sentence of the question again? Because I have a suspicion about the environment in which this is asked.
How would you respond to someone citing the paradox of tolerance as a reason to not tolerate Christian views?
Okay, there it is. The paradox of tolerance as a reason not to tolerate Christian views. All right. Now, there's a range of things that pertain to Christianity here that are a concern to those who want to be intolerant to Christian views. And what I did, and notice that Popper, who is a very well-known philosopher of science, okay, he's saying that the paradox is if you tolerate too much, you lose all tolerance. Okay, so you have to draw the line somewhere. Now, in the relativism book, I talk about three different types of tolerance. And this is very important to make this distinction because it allows you to draw the line in places that matter. And I talk about the difference between tolerance of persons, tolerance of behaviors, and tolerance of ideas, all right? So tolerance of persons is just like respect. It is showing grace and respect to individual human beings. And this concept of tolerance of persons is grounded in the notion that we are made in the image of God. I mean, this is a Christian notion. This is leftover stuff from the Christian worldview that was central to the founding thinking of the American experiment. Of course, the foundation of that is gone, and one could justly ask, why should anyone respect anybody else? Now, I don't think most who reject the Christian worldview and maybe are atheists or fully humanist can answer that question. I think they wouldn't say they're disrespect. We have no reason to respect, but they don't have any adequate grounding. Okay. Well, they'll say things like, well, we should be empathetic to others. Well, wait a minute. Why should we be empathetic to other human beings and not to bumblebees, for goodness sake? So anyway, you see, it's a vicious circle. If you have no grounding, you have no rationale for these behaviors. We have a grounding, and therefore we advance what is obviously a virtuous or a virtue, and that is the respect for other human beings. But with the grounding gone, of course, that begins to disintegrate. That's what we've seen in our society, okay? And the second kind of tolerance is tolerance of behaviors. And the fact is, our laws demonstrate that, you know, we never, even a tolerant society doesn't tolerate all behaviors, okay? There are certain behaviors that are just immoral and consequently in a way that's a threat to the common good. And when you have immoral behavior that's a threat to the common good, then you have to say no. You know, you can't do those things. That's what the laws are for, okay? And of course, this is, I think, what Popper is getting at. If we don't disqualify anything in the name of tolerance, we're going to tolerate all of that stuff. Pretty soon, those people who have the ability to stop all tolerance and become tyrannical are going to take over. And therefore, we have to have some governance in society to keep the tyranny from taking over and wiping out tolerance. But here the question is, where in Christianity do we see any ideas that cause a threat to that? The answer is none. There's nothing in biblical Christianity that creates that kind of threat. You know, when I was in behind the Iron Curtain in 1976, there was a well-known Romanian dissident Christian whose name I might think of in a few moments, but he wrote a book, I think it was called The Christian Manifesto, and a similar title to Francis Schaeffer's work, but this he went in a different direction. And this was directed at the government, and it was meant to make the case against persecuting Christians because Christians made the best citizens. We believed in the law, we believed in virtue, we believed in honesty and integrity and all obeying the government's everything. Why would you persecute us? We're the best kind of citizen. And this is my response to this general challenge. Why do we need to stop tolerating Christian principles when Christian principles are the things that created the foundation for a free liberal democracy to begin with? Okay. Now, here's the curious, and the last is the tolerance of ideas. Okay, so you have tolerance of persons, respect, tolerance of behaviors, which we don't agree with that, but we have to make moral distinctions about what's good for society in order to decide which behaviors we don't tolerate and which ones we do. And then there's toleration of ideas. And broadly, this is freedom of speech. And we have allowed all kinds of ideas to be tolerated in their expression. Not in their behaviors. People could talk about polygamy all they wanted, but we're not going to let that allow that to be legal. They can make their case, but we're not going to allow that to be legal. I mean, this is the conversations of the past. We know that's all up in the air now. Okay, but so those three categories, I think, give us some distinctions that allow us to provide the protection that Popper is concerned about with unmitigated tolerance, okay? But what's ironic right now is what is happening, and the best way to show the irony is to actually read Popper. Okay, so I'm here reading Popper from his book, The Open Society and Its Enemies, all right? And here he talks about the paradox of tolerance. This is the issue. Unlimited, and a portion of this is the citation you just read, but I want to keep reading if the listeners will put up with me. It's very interesting in light of the kind of challenge that's being offered. Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. And I agree with that in principle here. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, and let me pause for a moment. Okay, that needs to be fleshed out a little bit. Those who are intolerant, and but let me just keep going. Okay, even to those who are I pause simply because I know the Christians are considered intolerant, but according to a certain understanding or definition of tolerance, okay, we don't agree with the left's views, and we think they're wrong. Okay, that's what's required here is tolerance of ideas from the left, but they don't want to do that because they think that when you say that homosexuals are wrong, you are being intolerant, but we aren't being intolerant by any definition of intolerance. We're just expressing our views. We're not stopping any behaviors, all right? But we are being called intolerant, all right? No, I want to continue. If we're not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. This is the important part. In this formulation, I do not imply, for instance, that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerance philosophies, as long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion. What's that? That's called freedom of speech. Okay? Then suppression would certainly be most unwise. That is suppression of the ideas, which is the nature of intolerance by the left of Christians. But we should claim the right to suppress them if necessary by force. Now, what's the conditions under that? For it may easily turn out that they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument, but begin by denouncing all argument. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it's deceptive, they say, and teach them to answer arguments by the use of their fists and pistols. This is a perfect description of the left. This is exactly what the left is doing. We can't even tolerate the expression of those views, you know, because the expression of those words, weaponized words, all these different ways that they justify with their demagoguery and slick rhetoric, silencing of views they don't like. So this is what the left does, is it suppresses ideas, all right? And if you express those ideas, it silences them. And sometimes it suppresses those ideas when they are graciously and rationally given, with the accusation that rationality itself is a tool of the oppressor. This is exactly what Popper is warning against. It is the left that he's warning against over the practices that are characteristic of the left right now, not of the right, certainly not of Christians, all right? That's what he's warning about. He's saying society should rise up and stop people from doing what the left is doing, because if they don't, real tolerance will disappear and it will be reduced to tyranny. This is precisely the theme I've been following for the last few months in Solid Grounds that are coming out. And in May, the third will come out and make it even more clear. Okay. But what's interesting about the shift in the rhetoric is that the left has characterized their views as the civilized, good, high moral ground view, and convinced so many people of it, they think that when they are simply disagreed with and opposed in a reasonable way with alternate evidence to demonstrate that their claims are not true, that this, in their view, is an act of violence itself. And so there is a suppression of all dissent. I'll just finish the citation then, because I know you want to jump in. We should therefore claim, in the name of tolerance, the right not to tolerate the intolerant of that sort he's describing. We should claim that any movement preaching intolerance places itself outside the law, and we should consider incitement to intolerance and persecution as criminal, in the same way as we should consider incitement to murder or to kidnapping or to revival of the slave trade as criminal. It's interesting that he makes a reference to slave trade there, because that's broadly with the backdrop of racism. And ironically, Karl Popper is a philosopher of science. And the kind of intolerance that we are seeing enforced is now even going into science, where science is being constrained by certain political categories, famously the racism, and we have to make math and science, et cetera, the STEM categories less racist. And so we must enforce our view on others and silence the expression of contrary views. I love the objection, and I think there's substance to the objection, but it's being applied in the wrong direction.
What you said, Greg, about the three kinds of intolerance, I think is really helpful. Because once you apply this to ideas, it becomes unworkable. Because, of course, the way they want to apply the paradox of tolerance against us would certainly, as you described, apply to them, even just in terms of ideas. So if they are against my ideas, then shouldn't I not tolerate them? That it's just completely unworkable. It just becomes a matter of who is able to get enough power to stop the other person's ideas.
Right. It's a classical example of the tactic, the suicide tactic, the self-refuting nature of this challenge, and the audacity of someone citing Popper to defend the kind of thing that's going on in the silencing of disparate views right now. It's so ironic, because Popper was making, when you look at the details, the kind of point that would incriminate those who are now imposing Popper's view against Christians.
And of course, sometimes I think it's hard for people like you and like me, Greg, who have been Christians for so long and are so steeped in the Christian worldview. We don't really, this doesn't even make sense to us. What we don't understand is that they are actually viewing our disagreement against their views on sexuality and on gender. They view that as a violent threat against their identity.
Right.
Their personhood, their dignity.
Right.
So this is what makes this so difficult to counteract, because we are seeing it as ideas and they are seeing it as, if you say that what I'm doing is wrong or that I can't do what I want to do, then this is a threat against my personhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are turning that into a something of violence that would be, that they would think would what Popper said would apply to that situation.
Right.
So that's what makes this so difficult to counteract.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a big eye opener to me when I got a clear picture, as others who I was reading explained this to me, that I couldn't understand why Antifa, for example, was doing all these violent things and Black Lives Matter all in the name of love and justice. What? You know, no hate on the combat shields of Antifa when they go in and brutalize people and burn cars and trash stores and stuff like that. What a contradiction. But you see, this is exactly what you're saying. Their understanding is that if you express an idea contrary to theirs, that is an act of violence with those words. That's where the phrase weaponized words came into existence. And they feel, now I can defend myself. And in defending myself means, since yours is a personal attack against me on an identity level, as you pointed out, this goes back to Carl Truman and the rise and the triumph of the modern self, that explanation to get a clear picture of things. Then, since they feel personally assaulted, to respond with assault, physical assault in return, is an appropriate act of self-defense. Now, this is all radical distortion of the truth, and it leads to totalitarian societies, which is the direction we're going, and it's what I've been arguing these the last few months. But and then justifications like this are classic justifications that are being used by the left to silence dissent. Okay, and I have mentioned a number of times I'm reading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and you see the patterns in there, and I see the same patterns. Hitler was always talking about how he wants peace. He's working hard for peace, but what he's opposing, and this is just, I'm right where he's about to attack. Poland, September 1st, 1938, the start of the Second World War. I'm working with the Poles. I'm trying to get them to accede to modest demands, and they won't listen. They won't. They are obstinate, and they are foolish, and we are doing the best we... I mean, all of this noise, when in fact, for months, he's been packing troops up along the border, ready for that invasion, which he had decided for Case White... to initiate on September 1st. That's it. It's a foregone conclusion. All of this noise is just noise. And now Hitler had this as a conscious design. I don't think it's a conscious design so much in the minds of all of the people. I think they're misled by their own words. It's so amazing. And I think there's a powerful spiritual dimension here. But the dynamic is the same. We just want love, peace, acceptance, tolerance. We want everybody to love each other. We want us all to get along. As long as you agree with everything we say, we'll get along. All right? That's the idea. As long as you agree with all of my thing, well, then you have a place in our community. Then we're so tolerant. But we will not tolerate intolerance. What's intolerance? Your view. Anything about your view. Oh, goodness, goodness, goodness.
In case anyone out there is feeling a little discouraged by this, because obviously there are so many things involved here, so many ideas, so many worldview issues, that it can be a little bit overwhelming, especially if someone comes and asks you this particular question. And I think as Christians, what we need to do is just take one person at a time, have our conversations, do what we can to express the Christian worldview and why we think differently from them. And then in the people you have influence over, make sure you're training them in worldview. Make sure that they're learning what is true about reality. And you start small and you talk to the people that you can talk to. And you go from there. Mm-hmm. So we just do what we can with the people around us. And look back at the beginning of the church. It started small. But look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was when they made their case, they convinced people and the Holy Spirit worked. So mm-hmm. don't give up. Just keep going ahead. Learn what you can. Teach what you can. And let's do what we can here to spread the truth.
It's a great way to end this point here. And I just wanted to underscore two things. Actually, the order there. Confidence in the truth and faithfulness to the truth first. Persuasion of others second. All right? If we are not confident of the truth, we may be persuaded by others that we don't have the truth and then be unfaithful. Victory for us is not persuading others. Victory for us is faithfulness to our audience of one. And so this is why what Amy has said is so important. Giving the information that builds the confidence that people have that the Christian view of reality is an accurate view of reality, and being faithful to that regardless of what happens. And as a next step, persuade who you're able to, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to persuade many people at this particular point in time. You stay faithful. Here, this is where I'm kind of broadly thinking of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. You know, stay faithful, you know, and the other Christians in that environment, stay faithful, know the truth, be faithful to the truth, change what you can change. But that's not your mark of success. Your mark of success is faithfulness individually. And I love that way you put it. You can't take on the whole culture kind of is your implication there. One person at a time. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Greg. And thank you, everyone, for sending us your questions. Please keep sending those on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.